The following is a 1250 WTMA special presentation.
WTMA Talk Radio 1250.
Hello, this is John Quincy, back with another hour of the History of TMA. Our retro look at the folks and the formats that have graced the airwaves of the station you're listening to right now.
124, this is John Browell. On the telephone with me is Glenda Blankenship. Glenda, you're making the best of a cloudy day. Are you there, Glenda?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, now, Glenda, all you need to know to win is WTMA. So for 1250, which one of the letters do you think is coming up this time?
W.
The W. Good luck. That is right, Glenda. Glenda, congratulations. You just won. Yeah, now hang on the telephone. I'll tell you how you can pick up your money. We'll be playing again in a few minutes. Remember, all you need to know to win is WTMA.
In previous hours, we've tracked our history from WTMA's June 1939 sign-on as the city's second radio station, WCSC was the first, through the top 40 radio days of the 60s and 70s, and into the 80s when WTMA's relevance as a music-formatted radio station was diminishing.
Hi, everybody. Jack Gale welcoming you once again into The Bud Room, brought to you by Budweiser Beer.
Lots of legendary air personalities have been a part of WTMA's success over the decades. Names like Jack Gale, Doug Randall, Charlie Bird Lindsay, Booby Nash, CJ and Buzz, and the gentleman we're going to spend this hour with. The man that helped TMA transition from tunes to talk and paved the way for the WTMA you hear today. The one and only
Dan Moon.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here we go with hour number two of the call-in portion of the Dan Moon Show.
You didn't say Dan, did you? D-A-N?
I did, okay. Indeed. I didn't say
sure.
That. Yeah.
Okay. I'll make sure.
Welcome aboard, my friend. Second half of our Monday get-together. You know, I haven't been here on a Monday in a while. Think about that for a minute.
Yeah,
it's strange to say Monday.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, Friday too. Welcome aboard.
All right, let's start
friend.
This off from the beginning as far as WTMA was concerned.
God, how did you? Way back. I wasn't here in the beginning, John.
As far as WTMA was concerned, as far as you, how did you come to WTMA? You weren't in radio at the time, were you?
No, I had I'd gotten out of the business. I was working for a country station, WEZL, in this market. Me and Charlie Lindsay and a bunch of other good guys. And I just felt like after 24 years in the business, I was tired of it. I'd done everything that I thought I could do in the business, and I was just bored, wanted to do something different. So I went into the manager over there one day and said, "That's it. I'll give you 2 weeks." Well, they didn't believe me, I don't think. A month later, I was still there saying, "Listen, I'm really serious. I'm going to leave." 6 weeks later, I'm still saying, "That's it. I'm leaving. I'm gone." And finally, I left. Got out of the business altogether. Went to work for a tractor company selling tractors, Ford tractors, down on Savannah Highway. Down there where that Money Man Pawn Shop eventually moved. We were right down there and stayed down there for almost 3 years. Always in the back of my mind, though, I had radio in my mind. In fact, I continued to do some commercials for Charleston Ford Tractor, the place I worked at the time that ran on the air. But then eventually got into, the interest rates. This was in the late 70s, early 80s. Interest rates got high. Nobody was buying a $50,000 tractor and financing at 20 or 21% interest. So I saw the handwriting on the wall and got out of there and was up trying to sell some advertising to a cable system in Somerville for Somerville Speedway. I was up there for a while with Charlie Powell until that track finally met its demise. But I went in there to sell some advertising, like a sign on the back straightaway, and they said, "Listen, you got a career in broadcasting, don't you? Yeah. We need somebody to run our local origination." So I did that and eventually got into management. And I was doing well up here in Somerville. I really had a wonderful job.
This was at the cable company
in Somerville. This was the cable company in Somerville. It was owned by Wometco Cable at the time out of Miami, Florida. And I did well with it. Made more money than I ever made in my life. Had profit sharing plans. Had stock incentives and all kind of good stuff. Doing well. And then I get a telephone call one day from a guy named Bob Ballantyne. He was a manager for WTMA and also for 95SX, which were both in the same building at number one Orange Grove Road. But he called me one day and he said, "Dan," he said, "I'd like to talk to you about coming down and doing a morning show on WTMA." And you got to remember, at the time, TMA was just almost irrelevant. It was like ranked number 24 out of 25 radio stations.
They were playing country music at the time.
Yeah, they were playing, well, actually, they had just started playing the country. And it was a network-delivered service, Satellite Music Network, SMN.
So no live disc jockeys
no,
in Charleston?
No live disc jockeys whatsoever. It was all coming in, automation deal. But it was supposed to be automated. It wasn't automated. Let's put it that way. And they just turned the pot on and let the music come down from this Satellite Music Network. But there was no equipment there to automate it, to fire off commercials, play jingles, or cover up things that are not supposed to be aired. So they asked me if I'd come down and do a live morning show. And I said, guys, why in the world would I want to do that? I mean, I've got a good job. I mean, I've got the best job I've ever had in my life, making more money than I ever made, and I don't have to get up early in the morning, you know. As long as I'm at work by, you know, 8:39, I'm fine, good to go. And I leave out of here at 5:36 in the afternoon. I mean, come on, it's great. Sure, it's a lot of stress. I'm managing a lot of people. I mean, but why would I want to leave? Oh, and I left out the part. When I went to work for that cable system as a local operations manager, the local operation channel, they eventually moved me up to general manager of the cable system. And I had altogether about 76 people, I think it was, working. But at any rate, it was very stressful. So when these guys called me down at TMA and asked me to come down there, I said, I don't want to do that. Then they called again about a week and a half later. Then they called again about a week or two later. And I said, well, okay, I'll meet with you. And we met. And they convinced me to go down there. Come find out, I was the only employee, period, other than this Bob Ballantyne, who was the general manager. I mean, there was no sales staff back there. There was no engineering staff. There was no staff at all, except whoever they hired, like me.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back there and agreed to do it. I don't know why I did. I guess for all those years out of the business, which was almost 11 years, I guess in the back of my mind, I always wanted to get back into radio. I just didn't want to admit it. In fact, I never had walked into a radio station the entire time I was out of it, those 11 years, because I knew if I ever did, I'd probably get hooked on it again. Anyway, when I went down there and met with these guys, it was a mess down there. I mean, it was really a mess. The once mighty TMA was not mighty anymore. Not mighty as far as any ratings go. Not mighty as far as the studio goes, the transmission equipment. The whole thing, it just deteriorated down. I mean, it was just a mess. I mean, you could just look at it, and you walk into that control room, that historic TMA control room over on One Orange Grove Road, and it was a mess. I mean, the equipment was dusty, dirty, pots missing their knobs, lights burned out all over the board, and nothing half worked anyhow. So they wanted me to go down and do a morning show. And I said, fellas, I don't know about this. But at any rate, they agreed to pay me a decent salary. I figured I can do this morning show from like 6 to 9 each morning. And the cable system is running pretty well up here in Somerville. You know, I can leave here at 9. I can dash up to Somerville. Traffic's not too bad in the morning. I can be up there at my cable system in Somerville by 9:30. So I said, you know, if I got to stay an extra half hour, 45 minutes in the afternoon to run this thing, I'll do it. I can do them both. And I attempted to do that for a while. But I got to the point where I couldn't walk out the door of TMA at 9 o'clock in the morning because it was such a mess. I couldn't repair things. I couldn't fix things while I was on the air. But after I'd get off the air at 9, I so looked forward to pulling that cart deck apart and cleaning everything. I looked forward to raising up the lid, so to speak, on the control board and getting in there with some electronic cleaner and a toothbrush and a vacuum cleaner and whatever needed. And I looked forward to resoldering wires that had come loose in that control board to get things working again. But I couldn't leave at 9. I wound up staying there till 9:15, then 9:30, then 9:45, and then 10. And at any rate, eventually, while still working, doing both jobs, I went to a cable convention down in Hilton Head. They had the Playboy Bunnies down there. I'll never forget that. And this was the early days of cable, and they were trying to get cable operators to put the Playboy channel on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ted Turner would show up at some of these cable conventions because he was trying to get people to put this brand new thing on called CNN. Anyway, all of these channel operators that are so mainstream today, they were all new, and they were trying to get cable operators to put them on their cable system so they could get subscribers and get some money, some revenue. So anyway, the Playboy channel was down there, and they had these real live Playboy bunnies, and we could get our pictures taken with them. I don't know if that's what caused it or not, but I had a heart attack. My wife, to this day, she says, that's what it was. Dan, your heart just couldn't stand it, standing next to those Playboy bunnies in those skimpy suits. But anyway, I had a heart attack. I got back, and they sent me down to the hospital and at MUSC. I stayed down there for almost a week. They ran every test in the world and did the heart catheterization stuff. Anyway, they determined that I'd had a heart attack, but no permanent damage had been done. But the doctor says, Dan, you've got to get into something less stressful. And I couldn't change the situation at the cable. I had a regional manager who was just an arrogant son of a gun. I had to make a choice, so I gave up the cable system. I told the guys down at TMA, which was, by the way, was owned by a guy named Joel Fairman at Faircom, or Fair Communications, Faircom. And I met with both of them, and they agreed to give me a little increase in salary, and if I would come down here full-time, a lot less than I was making at the cable system. But doctor's orders said you got to get into something less stressful. Like I said, I think the good Lord had something to do with it, too, putting me in that position. A wake-up call. Maybe he said, Dan, you know, money's good in cable, and all that's fine, but the stress is terrible. You know, your real calling is radio.
Mm-hmm.
This would have been the last part of 1988. We continued to play country music and did that until June the 1st of 1989. In February of 89, a guy named Bill Dudley bought WTMA. He didn't buy 95SX, though. He just bought TMA. And he bought the building and the 5 acres of land surrounding that building. He had to buy all of that because, as you know, AM radio stations have ground systems. And the antenna at TMA was about 280 feet tall. So you had to have 280-foot radius, 306 degrees around at least. He got it for a steal, Dudley did. He bought the whole cotton-picking thing. The radio station license, the facilities, the land, everything. He paid, I think, a little over $600,000. Which was just, I could say, a steal at the time. But he didn't buy the 95SX FM station. But they were still in that building. They were still owned by Faircom. They were still renting from us, or from Bill Dudley at the time. But any rate, we stayed playing country for a while.
What was the reaction, the local reaction, once you'd gone over there? Of course, WEZL was the big country radio station in town. Did the ratings improve on TMA? And what was the reaction from the folks that worked there with 95SX? Did they give you guys any credit, or were you
they didn't at first, because you got to understand, TMA had just sunk so low. It was like the stepchild in the back that nobody realized was still back there. I think most people just forgot about it, that he was even there. Salespeople didn't care about selling it because it didn't have any ratings at all. They didn't know how to sell it. It was just an old AM station. You know, everything, AM was dead. It wasn't going anywhere. In fact, they just might as well cut the thing off. That's the feeling of a lot of people that worked for 95SX at the time. They didn't even know it was back there. Had no idea. But after I went down there and started cleaning things up a little bit, and I'm not saying it's all due to me, but I think I'm going to take a little bit of credit for this thing. I'd spend all day long after doing a morning show, just cleaning up, begging, borrowing for equipment, stealing stuff from the other station if I could, you know what I mean? I did everything I could to improve the signal. Oh, and speaking of improving the signal, at the time, 95SX over there was the cash cow. They were the big station. And so all efforts went toward 95SX and absolutely nothing for TMA. As a matter of fact, the building was not wired properly. It was not grounded properly for RF. Radio frequency interference. And so they kept getting WTMA's AM signal feeding into some of the equipment at 95SX FM. And so in order to solve that problem, rather than properly rewired or ground things properly, somebody just went back there and said, well, we'll just turn the power down on that dang AM transmitter. So they had it down. They had the power just jerk way down on the thing. So instead of putting out its legal 1,000 watts at night and a 5,000 during the day, the thing was putting out somewhere in the neighborhood of around maybe 2,400 watts during the day, and probably somewhere in the neighborhood of around 400 watts at night, maybe. I mean, they just had everything turned down so that it wouldn't produce interference in the equipment at 95. You know, John, when I first got into broadcasting, you had to have a license to run a radio station. I mean, to be on the air, a third-class FCC license. So I had the knowledge. I had some knowledge of transmitters and plate voltage and wattage and plate current and all this stuff. And so I was taking the readings on the AM transmitter, and I knew something was really, really bad. So I went and pulled up some old paperwork from the original license of TMA, and it showed what the plate current on the transmitter could be, what the wattage could be, what the plate voltage could be, so on and so forth. So I went back there and just put it back up where it was supposed to be. I turned the knobs, put everything back up, ran up the plate voltage, the plate current, everything, got everything back up, cleaned the transmitter out. It was full of dust. Did all that, not being an engineer, but I did pretty good with it.
There's more with WTMA's founding father of local talk, Dan Moon, coming up next.
WTMA, Charleston.
You're listening to the history of TMA
with John Quincy.
The history of TMA.
Today we're spending some time on the legacy of WTMA, the second oldest radio station in Charleston, and the only one with its original call-ins.
Hey Al, good morning. Welcome aboard.
As we continue our conversation with the man who was Mr. WTMA for 15 years, Dan Moon.
I improved the signal. It was so much cleaner. instead of cart machines, the old cart decks dragging and wobbling because the capstan rollers were screwed up, I cleaned those. And then I took all of the music that they had on 45s and albums, the country music, and I spent weeks, months, taking it all and transferring it to carts, to those cart decks. And I made sure I had new carts. I told them I had to have them, and they ordered me, gosh, I don't know, a bunch of new carts. And now all of a sudden the cart decks were playing fine. It was a great sound. It really was. Sounded really good. And it was live in the mornings. And instead of not having somebody there to cover up the breaks that the network sent us at least once an hour, they had what they called network feeds. And it came at 20 or 21 minutes after the hour, each hour. And then stations were supposed to take a commercial break, and that would be the local spot for stations to play their local commercials. Well, we didn't have any local commercials, so we didn't have any commercials, local or otherwise. So they would play a network commercial, and then they would be just dead silence, and then you'd hear something like, "Stations, this is your closed circuit feed for Wednesday, October the 8th, blah, blah, blah." And then they would begin to give you instructions on, and this commercial shouldn't be played. You should replace this spot with this spot now, and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
And everybody was hearing this.
Everybody. It was going out all over the air.
Well, all five people who were listening.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I hired a board operator. And nobody wanted to do it. Nobody wanted to work at TMA. But I hired a guy they had working over at 95SX. He wasn't on the air, but he was doing marketing calls at night. And so this guy got fired. And I got where I saw this guy because I was around TMA all the time. And this guy was coming in there in the evening, and I felt sorry for him. And so they fired him. And I went to him one day, and I said, "Would you like to a job? I can hire you back at TMA." "At what?" I said, "At TMA." "What is that?" I said, "Station in the back, AM station." Oh, I didn't know it was an AM. Yeah. "What do you play?" I said, "Well, we play country music." "Country music?" Well, his ears perked up. This guy, by the way, his name was Roy Monroe. And I said, "Yeah, it's country music. Now, I'm sure you don't like country music." He said, "Well, I like country music. Charlie Pride and Ray Price and Buck Owens and Merle Haggard." And he started running off a list. And I said, "Okay. Now, you won't be playing it. You'll just be monitoring it. And once an hour, that's all you got to do, just once an hour, cover this breakup." So anyway, I hired him, and he was good, and he learned it. I taught him the board, and he learned it real good. And eventually, you know, Roy went on, became a very valued employee. I put more trust in him, and he eventually worked in. I gave him a Sunday morning talk show even. And then eventually he got where he was doing a little show in the afternoons on his own every day. We eventually took TMA, playing the country music, and got some ratings with it, John. So the salespeople started coming back here now saying, "Hey, I got a client that wants to buy some advertising on WTMA. How do I handle this?" I said, "Just give him to me." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Just turn him over to me." "Oh, no, he's my client." I said, "No, well, not for TMA, he isn't. He might be your client for 95, but no, not for WTMA." "What are you talking about?" I said, "Listen, none of you salespeople gave a darn about TMA. You didn't care. You could care less if we were even back there. Didn't even know it." And I said, "No. Now that I've worked hard to put this thing together and got an actual little rating on it, you're not going to come back here and do it now. I will sell TMA. And the only one that'll sell TMA." So, any rate, I wound up being manager, chief engineer, one of two employees, and the morning personality, program director, operating, you name it. I was it. And we did well with it. We sold it, and we started making some money. And now all of a sudden people started paying a little bit of attention. And about the time we were starting to come up in the ratings and people were paying attention and we were making a little money, this guy Bill Dudley comes in and buys it. And then I hear he's going to change it to talk radio. And I said, "Oh, my Lord, come on, you can't be serious, Mr. Dudley." I don't remember whether I called him Mr. Dudley or Bill. Actually, I wound up calling him some other names, too, because I was really upset with him for saying he was going to do this. I'd never heard of, quote-unquote, talk radio. Because then, you got to understand, talk radio was generally relegated to the big markets. Chicago, New York, Los Angeles. I mean, you know, the big market. And maybe a few media markets, but that was about it. And he said he was going to switch it over to talk. And I said, "You mean you're going to play no music?" "No, none." "No music? No. Just talk?" "Yeah. Talk and commercials." "Yeah. And people are going to listen to that." "Well, I hope so," he said. I said, "That ain't going to work." So at any rate, he said, "Dan," he said, "I'd like for you to stay here and run this thing." He said, "I got a guy named Mr. Jett, Hugh Jett, coming in. He's going to be the general manager, but he doesn't know much about the programming side of it. He knows a lot about the sales end of it. That's what he comes from, that end of it. So I want him, if he would run that end. I'd like for you to run the programming end of things. I'd like for him to be like the general manager and you be like the operations manager." And I said, "Well, you crazy as the Dickens, Mr. Dudley. You know, you crazy. You're stupid or crazy. I don't even believe in this. I don't even think talk radio will work. What do you mean?
Hmm.
And you want me to run it?
Did you even think about doing a talk show?
No, at that time, no. As a matter of fact, I had no desire. When we switched it over to talk radio, I was so upset with him. But I stayed there. And don't ask me why, other than the fact that the good Lord was holding his hand on me saying, don't move. Stay here. Because I wanted to. I wanted to get out. I said, this is ridiculous. This is not going to work. This is not what I got back into radio for. And I could feel my blood pressure going up again. And I remember the doctor's orders. But I said, all right, Dan, just calm down. You know, what's the old story? If you want another job, find another job and then quit. Don't quit and then try to look for another job. So I stayed down there. And a few weeks went by. And then a couple of months, we had a guy named Dave Parker in the mornings doing news, and Dorothy Complenty was the companion with him. She did the news. And then we had a guy named Worth Waring down there with us when we first went to talk. He was doing morning commentary and putting the newscast together in the mornings. He was kind of like the news producer. We hired a guy named Scott Kaysen. Scott was just a whiz at doing commercials. You could call him like production manager, I guess. But he also was a board operator. The only thing live we had on the air from in our studios was the morning gig, and that was with Dave and Dorothy. And Worth would do morning commentary. I used to go in there and just jump in there and do a fishing report. Most of the time it was recorded. I mean, I didn't want to go down there at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning and do that.
Dan Moon, TMA.
The history of TMA continues with more from the Moon Man in moments.
For more about WTMA's past, surf to WTMAmemories.com for recordings, interviews, pictures, and more. That's WTMAmemories.com. You're listening to the history of TMA.
WTMA Charleston.
Hello again, this is John Quincy, and we've got the Wayback Machine parked in the recent past as we spend more time with the one and only Dan Moon. Do you remember the talk shows that you had on the initial
batch
TMA talk shows?
Yeah, after the morning show with Dave and Dorothy, the news, call it the morning news or whatever, I know. We had Joy Brown. She was the, psychologist. She did 10 to noon. I guess it had to be 10 to noon, but I'm trying to remember what we did 9 to 10 now, if that's the case. Oh, we stayed the morning news till 10. That's what it was. Yeah. Then we went with Joy Brown. And then we went with a guy named Rush. What was his name? Limbaugh.
I've heard of him.
Limbaugh. You've heard of him? Yeah. And he was an unproven guy. I mean, he'd only been doing a nationwide syndicated talk show at this time, maybe 6 months, if that long. But we put him on. And he was on the air for 2 hours, not three, but 2 hours. And then we went in the afternoons to, it was all under the banner of ABC Radio, ABC Talk Radio, even Rush. He was under the banner of ABC Radio. Joey Brown was too. And then after Rush, gosh, we had English-speaking guy. God, I think
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson. You're absolutely right. Had Michael Jackson on the air. And then we went to Dr. Dean Adele after that. After Dean Adele, we went to Bruce Williams, NBC TalkNet. I'll never forget that, which is now defunct too, long gone as well. And then all night long, we ran... what's the guy name? Larry on CNN. What's
Larry
his
King?
King, I think it was. Larry King. Yeah. Larry King, yeah. He wasn't doing television, and he was just doing radio is all. But that was the format. And then the next morning, 6, we'd start all over again. But I still didn't believe in it until September the 22nd. Well, 21st and 22nd of 1989, because that's when this visitor came in blowing a big wind, Hurricane Hugo. Came in and hit us the night of September 21st, 22nd. In fact, the eye crossed down through Charleston Harbor right at midnight. The day before it hit, all my staff had basically skedaddled out of town. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory fashion to put them down in any way, shape, or form, but none of them, for the most part, I don't think had ever been through a hurricane. I think Worth Waring was the only one who had been through a hurricane before, or not one this strong, but been through one. And Worth didn't leave town, but everybody else just took off, headed up the road. Our news director, all the air people, everybody took off. So I was the operations manager, and I said, guys, I understand, go. I mean, I stayed on the air and just forgot all the network programming because here we had this big, at that time, Category 4 hurricane bearing down on us, supposed to hit later on that evening, that night. And people were in mass evacuation mode and stranded. It was almost like, well, you remember the Hodges we had with Hurricane Floyd when Governor Hodges was on? Well, this was a Floyd. They managed to eventually get both lanes of the interstate opened up, and people were able to get out of town a little quicker than they were with Hurricane Floyd later on. But you'd have thought we'd learned our lesson. But still, it was a mess. People trying to get out of town, they couldn't. Taken forever. They were calling back on the phone. Dan, I'm here. Dan, I'm there. What's happening? I was the only, well, I say the only link, because the other stations in town were still doing their thing, basically, still playing music. 95SX was still playing music at the time, and I thought that was terrible. Come on, guys. We got a big monster coming down on us, and you're like business as usual. But anyway, we kept doing our thing and putting the information out there and putting telephone callers on the air, and I did that for hours and hours, and finally, about 1:30 in the afternoon, I get a call on the air from a guy who's with the Emergency Preparedness Agency. He called me and he said, Dan, he said, listen, you got to get out of there. I said, what are you talking about? He said, you got to evacuate. You got to get out of there, studio. You got to get out of there. I said, I can't get out of here. This is a radio station. If I leave this place, how in the world are we going to get the message out? So I stuck around and I said, I'm not leaving. And eventually, two of Charleston's finest came down and escorted me out of that building. But I just couldn't get out. And finally, I said, folks, I got to go, I guess. I mean, they're telling me I got to leave. You know, we were right there on the banks of the Ashley River, and it would have flooded terribly, I guess. Or
now, this was 1 o'clock in the afternoon or 1 o'clock in the morning?
No, this was in the afternoon. This was by the time I finally got off the air, it was like 3:20. I mean, I fought it for a couple of 2 or 3 hours. I wouldn't leave. And finally, about 3:15 or so, these two police officers come in with some other guy. I assume he was with the emergency evacuation people. I said, Mr. Moon, you got to go. We're here to escort you out of this building. I don't want to say I resisted physically, but boy, verbally, I did resist. But it didn't work. They were going to take me out of that building anyhow. So I just said to the audience, folks, I hate to leave, but they're telling me I got to go because of this and that and the other. And I just wish you a lot of luck. Gosh, I'll see you on the other side. And then we just signed the transmitter off and we were gone. And then I left the building and headed up to Columbia, where my wife and family had already evacuated to, and met them up there at Lake Murray. My father had a place up on the lake. But I just didn't want to get out of that building, and I felt so terrible. I felt like I was just leaving the audience hanging. I mean, I had a service to do. Something had to be done. Somebody had to do that, but they were telling me I had to go, and I just thought that was terrible. I was just wrong. Of course, my wife said, Dan, you realize you could have been killed. I mean, if you stayed down there. I mean, they were just looking for your own safety. Gosh, you're right there on the marsh. You're right there on the Ashley River. You know where the old One Orange Grove Road was. But what if the building had crushed in? What if the antenna had blown over and fell on the building? I mean, the water had come up. I mean, electrical stuff. You could have been killed.
Mm-hmm.
So she was glad I left. And John, I guess in the long run, I guess it just had to be. But dedicated radio people just... You don't want to leave. I mean, you've got a job to do, and it's not just a job, it's a duty.
22 minutes after 9, I'm Dan Moon, your News Talk WTMA.
WTMA Talk Radio 1250.
There's still more with Dan Moon as the history of TMA continues in mere minutes.
You're listening to the history of TMA.
All right, I just got a news bulletin handed to me. A plane has apparently crashed into the World Trade Center, one of the very top towers on the World Trade Center up in Chicago, or New York City, that's right, in New York. We will have details of that. You know, there are two buildings there that make up the World Trade Center. Just got a report a minute ago. We'll have details coming up at the top of the hour on that as they become available. But that's the news just now. Plane crashing into one of the towers on top of one of the buildings at the World Trade Center. I know by now you're just starting to sink in. Listen to what I'm telling you. There has been, I'm going to call it a terrorist attack, and I'm going way out on a limb, but that's my opinion, on the World Trade Center towers in New York shortly before 9 o'clock, or maybe, 15 minutes or so ago, 20 minutes ago, there was a report that there was this attack, that a plane had crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center. And just tremendous smoke and fire. And then just a matter of maybe 6, 7, 8 minutes ago, we got a report that another plane had crashed into the other tower of the World Trade Center. Tremendous fireball. I don't know whether you're following this or not. We're going to continue to follow it and going to talk about it this morning.
The history of TMA.
quick, Robin, to the Bat Radio.
Holy kilohertz, Batman. It's time for...
And the history of TMA rolls on. I'm John Quincy, and you know, you couldn't write the history of TMA without doing a chapter on Dan Moon. And that's what we're doing this hour.
The station, fortunately, when I got back the next day, the station was still there. We were off the air. A lot of damage. I mean, couldn't hardly get down Orange Grove Road. Had to park the car way, way back up there, almost to Northbridge Terrace, and then walk down there because of the fallen trees and power lines. But we got down there, and when I got down there, I heard something running. And I said, what in the world is that? And I walked around to the back of the building, and the generator was running. You know, we had a big 100,000-watt, 1-kilowatt generator that would power everything in that building. Well, it was running, or should I say, trying to run. It hadn't been maintained, and nobody had run it regularly. Of course, you got to remember, the new owners had just taken it over 4 months earlier. There were a lot of things to do, and getting that generator running, I guess, just was not one of the priorities at the time. And the previous owners didn't do it. But I walked on into the back door of the building. Limbs everywhere. Gosh, it was a mess having to fight my way. But I got to the back of the building, and I walked in the back door. And I walked on inside, and I hollered. I said, anybody here? And I get a voice back saying, yeah, it's me. It was Bruce Roberts, our engineer, who had come over when Bill Dudley bought the station and we made it talk. And he was in the back of that transmitter, and he had a hairdryer, a regular hairdryer you use in a bathroom. And he had it plugged into an extension cord that was run to the generator. That's why he had the generator running, trying to blow dry the transmitter, dry things out. And between replacing a few little things and blowing it all out and everything, eventually, by about 5:30, quarter to 6, Bruce had it dried enough to say, you want to give it a shot? It's go or blow time. Let's fire it up and see what happens. And so we did. And it worked. And it came on. And instead of hearing shh anymore, you heard silence. The transmitter was on. We were sending a signal. Didn't know how far it was going. Didn't have a lot of power. But it was on. And it stayed on for about 5 or 10 minutes. And then, bam, it went back off again. And the reason it went back off again was we didn't realize, but there was a thing out on the back of, on the tower, on the big main TMA tower. It was a big piece of equipment, it was like a beer keg almost. It's shaped kind of like a beer keg, a little bigger. But it isolated the AM tower from the FM antenna. Without this, you couldn't have put an FM antenna on, mounted onto an AM tower, because, you know, an AM tower, the whole tower is radiating, you know, out and sending RF waves out. And if you tried to put your hand or attach anything to it, it would short everything out. So you had to have this isolating unit on. Well, this isolator unit had blown away during the storm. We never found that. Never found it. Don't know where it wound up. So therefore, it shorted, boom, popped out. So then we had to make a decision, Bruce Roberts did, in conjunction with the owner, Bill Dudley. What do we do? I mean, do we just not, 95SX was back on the air again, if they wanted. They needed, and they kept saying they need to get back on the air again. Well, the FM signal would reach out further. It was a stronger 100,000-watt signal to reach out further than the AM signal. So the decision was, and besides that, they were our tenants down there, and Bill was making some money off them every month, and if they weren't on the air, how's he going to charge them, you know? So he made the decision to put them back on, which I thought was wrong. But at any rate, at the same time, the decision was made to shift some things around and run WTMA off the little small antenna that was towards the front of the building. You know, that was the directional antenna, much shorter. We called it the short stick, and then the big stick out back. But in order to run off the short stick, you couldn't feed 5,000 watts to it. In fact, you couldn't even feed 1,000 watts to that short stick at the time. So Bruce Roberts wound up turning the TMA thing back down again, like I found when I first went over there, and feeding the signal not to the big stick tower, but feeding everything to the little antenna out front. And I think we fed about 700 watts to that that little stick. But it was omnidirectional. Didn't have to worry about any directional patterns. And believe it or not, with that 700 watts omnidirectional, daytime and nighttime, you could hear us at nighttime on up in Goose Creek and above. Pretty good signal, as a matter of fact. But we stayed like that for a good long while. 95 came back on the air, and we were doing our thing at TMA. And I tuned to 95, and they were back just kind of doing their old stuff again, just playing the music, morning zoo, silliness, craziness, laughing, giggling, carrying on. And I said, you know, you mean to tell me we sacrificed at TMA so they could get back on the air and do that? Damn, I was mad. But at any rate, we stayed like that for a good long while on that. And I started coming on the air every night, starting about 7. And I was on the air from 7 to 11 in the days immediately following Hurricane Hugo for 3 weeks. And every night from 7 to 11, we'd come on the air and just open it up. And I'll never forget, I'd say, folks, here we are. And I'm Dan Moon. And this is the first time I've been back on the air again. See, I had no intention of going back on the air. I mean, I was content to sit behind a desk and just run it from behind a desk. But I went back on the air and started doing this thing at night. You know, we were all under a curfew, couldn't go anywhere. Besides that, you didn't have any electricity. Nobody hardly had electricity or power. Couldn't watch television because you didn't have electricity. Most people didn't have battery-operated TVs. So what were you relegated to doing? You had a battery radio. Everybody had a little portable radio of some sort. So you'd set the radio up, and maybe a Coleman lantern, and do your thing. And we built an audience because we found out everybody needed information. I'd open it up by saying, folks, now listen, we're all in the same boat. I don't want no griping, complaining. I don't want none of that going on. We're all in the same situation. I know you're wondering where you're going to get dry ice. I know you're wondering about when you're going to get your power back on. I know you're wondering about how you're going to get that tree off the top of your house that's crashed into your bedroom. I know you're worried about that. I know you're worried about a lot of things. We all are, though. Come on. We can't do anything about it tonight. We can't do anything about it now. Let's just talk. Let's share things. And it worked. And people tune in. And John, I don't know how many people were listening, but Arbitron wasn't rating then, but God, if they'd have been, I think we'd have been number one. I mean, that's what people wanted.
What was TMA doing during the day before you did your show at night?
Same thing. We were all day long passing out information. But we weren't taking calls from listeners. We were taking calls from the governor, taking calls from Senator this, taking calls from emergency this, from the emergency command center. We were getting information from mmayor this, mayor that, councilman this, councilman that, all these press conferences going on, the county emergency holding press conferences, Mayor Joe Riley, City of Charleston holding a press conference, County Council Chairman Linda Lombard at the time holding a press conference, that kind of stuff. So you were full of information, passing information out, where you could find this, where you could find that. They're passing out dry ice at so-and-so. They're passing out water jugs up at so-and-so and so-and-so. Hurry, get there now. First come type deal. They've got this available at so-and-so. So, I mean, we were just nothing but information all day long. And then at night, the information kind of ended. I said, folks, we're full. My brain, I don't know about yours, but my brain is full of information. I've been jam-packed with it all day long. Let's just sit and talk. Talk. And that was a key word. Let's just sit and talk. And for something that 4 months earlier I thought would never, ever work. By golly, here I was, right in the midst of it, in the thick of it, and it was working and doing exactly what it ought to do. Allow people to call in, communicate, talk, share ideas, share thoughts. Oh, and we had a few of them try to gripe sometime, but you know, that's talk radio. Mm-hmm. So at any rate, but I had a way of calming them down in the most part. If I had somebody calling up and wanting to gripe, I could tell right off the bat if they were mad about something, wanting to gripe, and I would say, let me ask you something. Hold on just a minute. Let me ask you something. Boy, wasn't it a beautiful day today? Did you see that sun out there? Did you see that sunset coming out today? Man, wasn't that thing pretty? And that person would say, yeah. Well, once you could get them to say yes to something, it was like pretty easy then to get them to say, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, I'm getting along a little better each day. I don't have my power yet either. That's a shame. But, you know, I think it's going to be here one day real soon. I mean, you know, the power crews are working like the dickens. I see them out there every day working hard as they can work, you know. And we all got to just use a little patience, you know what I mean? But I swear, when I'm sitting here thinking how bad things are and, oh, woe is me, you know, I look around and think, you know, I'm still here. I'm still here. You know, we lost right here in the Charleston area. We lost about 26 people in that storm dead. And so I think, you know, I'm still here. My family's still together. Telephone still worked. Wow. Thank God it did, or we wouldn't have had a talk show. And I still had somewhat of a roof on my head. I could have been in a lot worse shape. And I'd tell people that, you know, folks, let me ask you something. Your telephone working? Obviously, you're calling me right now. You don't sound like you're dry and parched. Are you getting something to drink? Well, yeah. You got some water? Yeah. Got some food to eat? Well, yeah. You got your radio on? That's good. Yeah. You got some batteries? Yeah. Well, dang, son. You're in pretty good shape.
It sounds like being a talk show host came naturally to you after all those years of being a music radio disc jockey.
I think it did. I often said, I still think it's true today, but a lot of people don't follow this rule, but I always thought that disc jockeys made darn good talk show hosts. Former disc jockeys made good talk show hosts. And I think because they had timing. You know how we could talk our way right up to the first word in a song, the singer's first word in the lyrics? We just had a beat. We could just anticipate. And the timing of throwing jingles in and having little liners to read and playing that music. And in my disc jockey days, most of the songs were not over 3 minutes long. Most of them were 2.5 minutes on average long. And guess what? I found out that about 2.5 minutes was a good average time for a call or two. So that worked out well. But think about it. Talk radio, the only thing I knew was disc jockey stuff. I mean, that was it, music radio. So I applied the same principle. I said, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to play jingles. That's good. Just like we did in music radio, we got some jingles we're going to play. We're going to play commercials. Hopefully, we'll get somebody to buy some commercials, just like music radio. We'll have some little liners. Now, folks, a liner is something like, hey, tune in tomorrow for the so-and-so show. Or don't forget, traffic and weather every 10 minutes right here. You know, that's a liner. But you'd read liners. You'd play jingles. You know, we did the news, top and bottom of the hour. And then we played callers in between. And the caller was just like a song. But we did a music format, but placed callers on the air instead of playing music. And it worked beautifully. It worked wonderful. Because you knew that you could just sense, if that record went on and on and on, I don't care if it was your favorite song, if it went on and on and on and on and on, it got old after a while. And you got tired of it. And you said, oh, come on. I love that song, but gee whiz, give me a break. You know, play it again later. Don't, you know. So I remember in music radio many years ago, there was a song that came out by a group. This had been back in the very early 60s, I guess, a song called Blue Moon by the Marcells. Anyway, dang a dang a ding a ding a ding a dang a dang dang, Blue Moon, remember that song? When it first came out, that thing just hit me. It was the greatest thing in the world. Oh, I thought that was wonderful. Dang, and that thing just took off, I mean, like gangbusters. And I was doing a show in Columbia at the time above Doug Broom's Drive-In Restaurant out on North Main. You know, the record companies used to send us 8 or 10 copies of every record, and then 3 or 4 weeks later, they'd send you another 8 or 10 copies because you'd wear them out, scratch them up, wear them out, queuing them up. But I put these things on each turntable, and I played that thing back to back to back for about 2 hours. 2 hours straight. And, oh, it got attention all right. But people said, God, I like it, but I'm tired of it. So I took that to note, and when I got into talk radio, I said, okay, fine. About 2.5, 3 minutes at the most. There were some exceptions. You know, Marty Robbins had a song out called El Paso. Remember that? And that song actually went, I think it was right at 4 minutes or a little. But those were exceptions for the most part. And if it was a big hit song, if Blue Moon had ran 5 minutes, I'd have played it. But the talk radio gig, yeah, I think there's a lot of credence put into former disc jockeys now doing talk radio. They work out real well with it, generally speaking.
All right, so the Dan Moon Show started after Hurricane Hugo. It was from 7 to 11. Yeah. Did that for about 3 weeks.
Didn't call it the Dan Moon Show, though. Not then. Didn't call it the Dan Moon Show from 7 to 11. It was just, I just opened up my mouth, opened up the mic, started talking. But we didn't call it anything, really. Just didn't call it anything.
It was just WTMA.
It was just WTMA. My name's Dan Moon. And how you doing? And that kind of thing. I became Daddy Dan. That was a moniker put on me by our general manager at the time, Hugh Jett. Well, actually, his wife, Cindy, put that moniker on because he would listen, and his wife, and I mean, everybody listened, and he would listen just like anybody else. To heck with, he was general manager, and his wife same way, because I would have a way, John, they said, of comforting people and making them feel better, like the father figure, which at the time I didn't appreciate because I wasn't that old. See, at this time, I was like, 48 maybe, and I was a father, but when they said a fatherly figure, they were talking about a fatherly figure for grown people, you know, which would have made me much older than that. And so I didn't appreciate it at the time that much. But Daddy Dan is what they call. Well, if you got a problem, just call old Daddy Dan. He can tell you what to do.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here we go. Hour number one of the call-in portion of the Dan Moon Show.
You got it. You got it, my friend. The show that has for 14 years almost allowed you to turn your telephone into a microphone to the entire low country. Your thoughts, opinions, comments and suggestions, not only welcome, but I might add, highly encouraged as well. We'll pass along some phone addresses in just a minute, get you up to date on that, how you get through to us on this Monday through Friday stint. At any rate, it is the bottom line is, you get a chance to tell the world what you think, and it's pretty darn important if you think about it, you know. There are many ways to do it. You can pick up the phone, call your neighbor. You can chat all day long about the world's problems or the problems in the low country, good and bad. But just you and your neighbor share it. But when you pick up the ringlinger and give us a buzz, we share it with everybody throughout the low country. So I hope you're not embarrassed easily, and I hope you don't mind talking to a few people.
A great big 5,000-watt thank you to Dan Moon for his memories of the decade and a half he spent here on the 1250 spot on the dial. And for all he did to pave the way for the TMA you hear today. I'm John Quincy, and if you'd like to find out more about our station's legacy, surf to WTMAMemories.com. you'll find rare audio recordings, photos, stories, and lots more. That's WTMAMemories.com. And keep it here on the station that continues to make history, as well as report it. 1250 WTMA.